One there is now in the young adult classroom downstairs. There's now a question box in there that can be used for the high schoolers or the young adults. If you've got questions that you want us to maybe address in class or you want us to address in a sermon, just go in there and drop it in the box. And I'll steal some of those. Greg will use them, but I will steal from that box. But it'll all work out. So if you've got some questions, you may use that box for that. Remember, last week, Michael kicked off our new quarter as we close out the year of looking at the man in the mirror as we think about changing from glory to glory. And this morning, I thought about a mirror, and I don't know how we haven't used this phrase yet throughout the year, but you remember probably Snow White, right? And you had the queen, and she said, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" And you remember the first time, right? "Queen, you're the fairest in the land." Well, there comes another time when she asks, isn't it? "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" By the way, I had to write it down because I don't know the quote. But, "My queen, you are the fairest here, so true. But Snow White is 1,000 times more beautiful than you." I thought about that. What makes somebody beautiful? And how much more so, what makes somebody 1,000 times beautiful? Is it you put on a suit today? Many of you have pointed out, "Wow, Wes, you're looking sharp today." Because I don't normally wear a tie and a jacket. But it's cold enough that I will break my rule to wear a tie and a jacket. But you say, "Wes, that beard. Man, you look like a mountain man. You look scruffy." I've had several people say that today too. That's not what makes you beautiful. It's not the fine clothes or you went and you got your hair cut and you spent hundreds of dollars on it and you got the new color. That's not what makes you beautiful. Or you went out and you bought some new clothes and you put them on. That's not what makes you beautiful, is it? What makes you beautiful is who you are. It's the things that you do. So it could be your wife that you think looks gorgeous when she dresses up. But you know, on that Saturday morning when your friend was moving and moving out of town, she got up 6 a.m., didn't put on any makeup, went over and helped him out, and you still said, "That's the most beautiful woman I know." Or when it was your husband or when it was your boyfriend and you see him holding a little baby and you thought, "What? That boy will hold a baby?" You say, it's who they are. It's not what they look like that makes someone beautiful, because we know what the Proverbs say. The Proverbs say in Proverbs 31, charm is deceitful. You can be fooled by somebody's charisma and somebody's looks. And beauty is passing. They may be gorgeous, but it's passing. It's fading away. It's vain. It's empty. But here's what it is. "But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised." When you get old and you're still fearing the Lord, you know what? You're just as beautiful, if not more beautiful, in old age than you were the day that your husband or your wife first laid eyes on you. Because the beauty is passing away. It's not just somebody who looks good. That's important, isn't it? If that's the most important thing, and here's kind of the idea. If you've got this spiritual woman, that's what Proverbs 31 is about. We've got this virtuous woman. She is spiritual, but yes, she raises money. She goes and she sells the land. She makes money. She works hard. She provides for her kids. All those things. But here we have another woman in the book of Proverbs that she's like a jewel of gold and a swine's snout. What woman is that? It is a fair woman. I'm using the King James because we just sang "Fairest Lord Jesus." We use the phrase, as we've seen the movie, "My Fair Lady." We mean that to mean beautiful. That's what the word means. And for a man, it would be handsome. So is a beautiful woman which is without discretion. It's like that gold, beautiful ring that should be worn on your finger and displayed to everyone else. Is to a Jew, it is in a dirty place that you can't come close to. That is a beautiful woman on the outside who has no discretion about her. It's all about how she looks. It's not how someone looks that makes them beautiful. It's who they are that makes them beautiful. So we have to ask ourselves one more question. What's the Bible say about beautiful people? This morning I want to look at five beautiful people. People that the Bible says were handsome or were beautiful. And this first character I want to tell you about, because I bet you know who it is. This man, he was a pretty well-known character in the Old Testament. Some might even say he's very important. I would be one of those. And he is living in a land, and a famine happens in his land. And he has to go and live in a land that is not his land, and he's going to have to go meet another king. And his wife, it says, is beautiful. And he's worried that the king and his people will also think his wife is beautiful and will kill him to take his wife. You probably remember the man, don't you? Abraham. Who was his wife? Sarah. Go to Genesis chapter 12. And wouldn't you know that his fear is exactly what happens. So what did he say so that they wouldn't kill him? Say you are my sister. Right? Because they were half brothers and sisters. Say you are my sister. So notice down in verse 14. So when Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And when the princes of Pharaoh, those of Pharaoh's servants, saw her, they said to Pharaoh, they praised her to Pharaoh. And so the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. We are talking about a beautiful woman. So beautiful that the king took her into his house. But you remember, it didn't work out so well with the king, did it? Verse 17. The Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abram's wife. But you know what the New Testament tells us about Sarah? You know what the New Testament also tells us? That she was a beautiful woman, but for a totally different reason. Go to 1 Peter chapter 3. If we just had this glimpse of Abram and Sarah, we might think, man, those are some pretty awful people. They deceived the king. They lied to the king. Going and you're sleeping with, and she didn't sleep with him, but you're staying in the king's house? Some pretty bad people. But you notice in 1 Peter chapter 3, when Peter is writing to wives and how they are to submit to their husbands, he says in verse 3, do not let your adorning be external. And some of your translations say merely external. And that's the idea. Don't let it just be about what you put on, such as the braiding of hair or the, and I can't even read my own Bible, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry and the clothing that you wear, all those things we mentioned at the beginning, it's not about that only. But what is it, verse 4? But your adorning, the way you present yourself, should be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty, which in God's sight is very precious. It's that thing on the inside that doesn't fade away. Beauty is passing. This imperishable, this inner beauty is not only very precious in God's sight, it is imperishable. It does not fade away. And he points out Sarah. Verse 5. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God, they trusted in God, used to adorn themselves. How is that? By submitting to their own husbands. You know, Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you are her children if you do good and do not fear in anything that is frightening. Does the New Testament praise her for her physical beauty? What does it praise her for? It praises her for her gentle and quiet spirit. It praises her for her submission and obedience to her husband, who she calls Lord, her master. Now I want you to think for a second. When did Sarah call Abraham her Lord? She was 90 years old. When the men came to Abram and to Sarah, and they said, "You will have a son." And Abraham is in the tent, and she laughed. And she comes out, she says in Genesis chapter 18 and verse 12, "How can I when my Lord is so old?" She's 90 years old, but this is when God says she is beautiful. It is because of her inner character. Think Abraham thought of her as just as beautiful? Maybe more so. He loved his wife. He didn't want to take another wife until after she died. He loved Sarah. That's what the Bible praises her for. Not for her physical beauty, but for her inner beauty. Now, there are some other beautiful people of the Bible we think. We think about our second one. You remember this guy. He first comes on the scene when he is a young kid. And he comes on the scene by slinging a stone into a big giant's head. And we know that to be David, right? But before he ever really did that, he was selected by God to be the next king over Israel. And in chapter 16, he is one of the sons of Jesse. And I believe he had 10 sons. And Samuel was told to go, and it would be one of the sons of Jesse that he would appoint king over him. First son comes out, and he looks the part of a king. God says, it's not him. And he goes through all the sons that are there. You remember, none of them were the sons. And Samuel's like, don't you have any more sons? And there was one who's out in the field. And that's our man David. And notice what our text tells us about David. If you open up to 1 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 12. And he sent and he brought him in. That's David. Now he was ruddy and he had beautiful eyes and was handsome. David was easy on the eyes when he saw him. He looked handsome, beautiful. Anoint and arising, for this is he. Remember the first king of Israel? Who that was? That was Saul, right? Remember how he was described? Not as handsome, but as head and shoulders above the rest. He was described because of his warlike abilities. David is described as this ruddy, beautiful-eyed, handsome man. But is that why God chose him? It's not, in fact, why God chose him. In fact, God says, if you look in chapter 16 there, of when the first son came out, that Samuel was, oh, this has got to be him. You'll notice that God said, verse 7, the Lord said to Samuel, don't look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. He wasn't chosen because he looked so good. He just happened to be handsome. He was chosen because of his heart. And you remember what God said about his heart in chapter 13. I have appointed a man who is a man after God's heart. And that's what the book of Acts tells us in Acts chapter 13. I want you to go there and I want you to see it from the New Testament's perspective. Of this man. About how Paul is speaking in Antioch. And he is trying to point out to them, Jesus is the Christ. He is the descendant of David. He is the one that David said was coming and the one that all the prophets said was coming. And there's a statement made of him in verse 22 of chapter 13. So when he had removed him, that was Saul, he raised up David to be their king, of whom he testified and said, I have found in David, the son of Jesse, a man after my heart. And I think this is what that means. Who will do all my will. I think that's what he means when a man after my own heart. He will go after my will. And you know what Paul tells us later in the chapter? Look there at verse 36. For David, after he had served the purpose of God in his own generation, fell asleep and was laid with his fathers, and he saw corruption. How did God feel about the job that David did? He served his purpose. But we look at David's life, and what do we think about? We think about a man who slept with Bathsheba. And we think about a man who was afraid of his children. And we think about a man who ran away from his son who was trying to take the kingdom. And we think about this weak old man. When God looked at David, what does he see? A man who made mistakes, yes. But a man who served God's purpose in his generation. And that's all God's asking of you and me. We look at Sarah and we look at Abram, they had their faults too, didn't they? But God looked at them because of their heart. Their heart was something different than the way they looked on the outside. They served their purpose. Am I serving mine? Am I doing my job as a Christian? We're going to talk more about that. Being Christ-like every single day, all those types of things. But they served their purpose. David served his purpose. Now these next two I want to go through pretty briefly. This third guy, he's a guy we looked at a few weeks ago. Joseph, right? And you remember Potiphar's wife looked at him there in Genesis chapter 39, I believe it's verse 6 or verse 7, and he was handsome. And so she went after him and she made approaches to him and all those things, right? But he withstood that. But he got thrown in prison. And he tells some dreams and he gets out the men. And finally, 2 years later, the cupbearer remembers. Oh, Joseph. And why did he remember Joseph? Because Pharaoh could not remember or couldn't figure out a dream. And he had got all these dreams. And the cupbearer said, oh, there's that guy in prison. Go to chapter 41 of the book of Genesis. And so I imagine, you know, I guess today if you go into prison or jail, they give you razors and those types of things to take care of yourself and shave up. I've seen it on TV, so I'm assuming that's probably the case. I don't know if that's necessarily the case with the Egyptian prison. I tend to think not on that. You know what David does when he gets out? Joseph. He's probably got a beard a lot uglier and a lot longer than mine. He's probably in some bad shape. And so you know what he does before he goes and he sees Pharaoh? Kind of like anything you and I would do before we go see somebody important. Verse 14. Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. We got a handsome guy who is now dressed up in all his beauty. And he comes in and he tells the king the dream. And he tells the king the interpretation of the dream, that there will be 7 great years of feast. But you better store up because there are going to be 7 years of famine. He's pointed out all along, this isn't me, this is God who is telling you this. And so notice how the king responds. Verse 37. This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. Remember how a minute ago, Sarah pleased Pharaoh's princes and Pharaoh? Joseph does the same thing. Not in the same physical sense, but he pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? You know what they could have found in all of Egypt? They could have found somebody who is incredibly good looking. But they could not find a man who had God's Spirit like Joseph had God's Spirit. And isn't that what chapter 39 tells us about why he was able to prosper in Potiphar's house and also able to prosper in the prison? It was because, and the text tells us multiple times, the Lord was with him. That's what makes us beautiful. Is when God is on our side, we stand out from the rest. Not because of our beauty, but because of who we are. This fourth one is the son of David. And he was praised by all of Israel in 2 Samuel chapter 14. He's praised by all of Israel because of his beauty. He had nice, long, flowing hair, you remember? And his name was Absalom. And he was one of those guys that he would sit outside the gate, and when the people would come to him, be like, "Hey, you got a problem? I'll take care of that. My dad's not taking care of that, but I'll do it for you. I got your back. You tell me and I'll get it." And so they followed him. And the people come out, and he starts this conspiracy. You'll remember. So notice what it says in verse 25. "Now in all Israel, there was no one so much to be praised for his handsome appearance as Absalom. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him." What does our text want us to get? There was no problem in the way Absalom looked. From his head to his toes, that guy looked good. But when he started his conspiracy, you know what the Lord wants to do to him? The Lord brought on him harm. Go to chapter 17 and verse 14. He received some terrific advice from David's counselor Ahithophel, who betrayed him. He received the best advice from Ahithophel. And it was as though it was advice from God. But here's what it is in verse 14. He didn't take that advice. "And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, 'The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel.' Why? For the Lord had ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel so that the Lord might bring harm on Absalom." He's beautiful. And he had an option. He had really good advice, and he had some bad advice. And he took the bad advice, not out of chance, but because the Lord had prepared to do him harm. You can be beautiful on the outside and be beautiful on the inside. You can be beautiful on the outside from the sole of your head to the tip of your feet. But if it doesn't go inside, God will do you harm. "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" Psalm 45 and verse 2 says, "Thou," I'm using the King James because it says fair, "thou art fairer than the children of men." There is someone who is more fair than all the children of men. And those of us who have been here on Wednesday night in the psalm class, we studied this psalm. And you might not know right off the top of your head who that is. But in Hebrews chapter 1, Psalm 45 is quoted. And it says, "None of the angels did he say this, but of the Son," he says, and he quotes from around verse 6, "Your throne, O God, is forever and ever. You have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore, your God has anointed you with it." You know who Hebrews 1 tells us is fairer than the children of men? Jesus. And isn't that what we've been talking about? Is looking into the mirror of God's Word to see Jesus, beholding in His face, as it were. Looking at Him to see who is the fairest. Yeah, Joseph was beautiful, and yeah, Joseph did good things, and nothing bad is said about him. But is he the fairest? And yes, Sarah was physically beautiful, and yes, she was inwardly beautiful. But was she the fairest? The fairest of all is Jesus. And you know what's so interesting about that? It's not his physical appearance. Go to Isaiah chapter 52. And we know chapter 53 incredibly well. We read chapter 53 many times at the table, the Lord's table here, to remind us of what Jesus did for us as that lamb that was slaughtered. But the song begins in chapter 52 and verse 13, "Behold, my servant shall act wisely, and he shall be high and lifted up, and he shall be exalted." Who's going to be exalted? Somebody, verse 14. "As many were astonished at you, his appearance was so marred." And by the way, that word appearance right there is usually the word handsome. It's the way you appear to others in a positive way. He says, "As his handsome was so marred, beyond human semblance, and his form beyond that of the children of mankind." The idea is, you would look at him, and he doesn't look like everybody else. He's not handsome. And isn't that what 53 says in verse 2? Verse 1, "Who's believed our report? And whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he," the same one who was going to be exalted, the same one whose handsome was marred, "he grew up like a plant, like a young plant, like a root out of dry ground, and he had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him." The fairest of everybody didn't even look good. But yet, what was he? He comes to earth. He goes to John the Baptist and he says, "John, I need to be baptized." And John says, No. "I need to be baptized by you." And he's baptized by John, right? You remember the voice comes from heaven and it says, "This is my beloved Son who I think is the best looking in the world. This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased." And in Matthew chapter 17, when he takes Peter, James, and John up onto the mount and he's transfigured, and they see him in all of his glory, and God says, "This is my beloved Son. Look at how good he looks in his glory. This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him." That's what makes you beautiful to God. Do what he says. But even though Jesus wasn't physically attractive to people, he said in John chapter 12, "The Son of Man must be lifted up. And if I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself." You and I have never seen Jesus, right? I'll tell you what I don't think of Jesus when I try to figure out Jesus. I do not see an ugly individual. I know that I probably should because of Isaiah 52 and Isaiah 53. I should probably pick maybe the ugliest person that I can picture and think of that. But that's not it, is it? He's the best looking. He is the fairest because of his devotion to God. And if people are interested in that, and they are interested that someone died for them, and that someone was bruised for their transgressions, and someone was crushed for their iniquities, and it is by his stripes that we're made healed. If somebody gave their life for me right out here on the street, I wouldn't care how ugly they were, because they would be the most beautiful to me because they gave themselves up for me. And God says, that's the way it is if you will give yourself up for me. So I want to be beautiful, right? What do you do when you want that new haircut? Or you want those clothes? You see a picture of it, don't you? You get out the magazine and you say, okay, that was back in the old days. So this is what I want to look like. Now you just pull it up on your phone and say, okay, this is what I want to look like. And I got a bunch of them. You can go through Google Images. This is what I want to look like. If I want to be beautiful, I'd better be looking at Jesus. And if I look there and I keep looking there, I'm going to be transformed and I'm going to be conformed to the image of His Son. And God will look at me and I'll be getting beautiful and more beautiful and more beautiful. Because I'm getting closer and closer and closer. Like the one who gave my life for thee. That's the one. And if you're there, as Ephesians 4 says, we grow up into the full stature of Christ. Grow in maturity. That's where some of us, God may look at us and He say, man, they're looking good. I'm very pleased with them. But guess what? It's changed from glory to glory to glory to glory. We have to grow until we reach the full stature. And as we said many times, we don't reach the full stature until we are dead in Christ, waiting on Him to wake us up with the last trumpet. Then we'll be complete. And then we can be glorified in our new spiritual body. And we can be with Him forever. And He will see Him as He is. And we will be like Him. Don't you want to be beautiful? Maybe you've got sin in your life that keeps you from being beautiful to God. Maybe our sin has separated us. And you're ready to have that sin removed so that you can put on the white garments, and you can stand pure before God, and He would look at you and say, that's a person who's after my heart. Maybe I've been baptized into Christ and I've been forgiven, but my heart hasn't been seeking Him. Maybe I look good on the outside, but my heart isn't there. I'm not beautiful on the inside to God. I don't want to be an Absalom. I want the Lord to understand I made mistakes, but I want to do His will, and I will do my best. And you need that renewed strength. You need that renewed comfort. Won't you come this morning and as we stand and as we sing?
Hark the gentle voice of Jesus calling tender.